We're talking about suicide prevention here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. More than 900 Wisconsin residents died by suicide in 2017, and new state data analysis is indicating the rate of suicide is growing, and it is a public health issue. Governor Tony Evers says it's time for Wisconsin to get serious about destigmatizing mental health. If you or someone you know may be contemplating suicide, call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline for free, confidential help. That number is 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. You can also text HOPELINE to 741-741 for immediate help. And there is space for your story, your questions as we discuss this. Do you work in social services? What do you tell people to think about or look for regarding suicide? How can government and health agencies and schools and community groups all work together to prevent suicide? Join in as we discuss this at 800-642-1234. Jonathan Singer is an associate professor in the School of Social Work at Loyola University Chicago. He's president of the American Association of Suicidology. He studies suicide intervention, cyberbullying, and family-based intervention. And he's founder and host of the Social Work Podcast. Jonathan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start with some myth busting. What are some of the most common myths about suicide?
You know, one of the myths is that if you ask someone if they're thinking about killing themselves, that that will put the idea into their head. And that's not true. If somebody is thinking about killing themselves, asking the question, hey, have you had thoughts of hurting yourself? Have you had thoughts of killing yourself? Has actually been shown to reduce distress and can be a helpful thing.
Oh, you mean like by just getting the conversation started and getting it out there, saying the word, that won't add an additional layer of they may try this?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, imagine that you're talking with your kid or a coworker or a friend, and they're saying, yeah, I don't know if people would care if I lived or died. If you're in that moment, if you're thinking, oh, I wonder if they're thinking about ending their life, there's probably part of you that's going to be like, well, I don't want to bring that up, because if I do and they haven't been thinking about suicide, then I'll put the idea in their head and then they'll kill themselves and it'll be my fault. But we know that that's not true. We know that asking the question, hey, it sounds like you've been going through a rough time lately. Even though this might not be something that you would normally think about, have you had thoughts of ending your life? Have you had thoughts about killing yourself? That actually reduces distress. It doesn't make people more suicidal.
So what is suicidal ideation? And that may be more of a clinical term, but can you help us understand it?
Yeah, suicidal ideation is what we talk about as thoughts of suicide. It could be just what I said, which is that somebody's, having this thought, like, I don't think anybody would mind if I were here or not. I think that it would be better for everybody if I were dead. And so those are suicidal thoughts, suicidal ideation. When I work with kids, sometimes they can't put their ideas into words, or maybe they're not even ideas, maybe they're more feelings. And so you might have people that say, I'm not really thinking of anything specific. I just feel like I should kill myself. And those feelings also qualify as what we generally consider to be suicidal ideation.
Suicide is sometimes portrayed as a choice that someone is making when they no longer want to live. Is that an accurate reflection of what suicide looks like for most people?
You know, when you're talking about a choice, you're making the assumption that people are weighing things that seem to be kind of equivalent. Like I could choose this banana or this banana, but the experience of folks who have survived suicide attempts and talked about it suggests that they, in that moment, they really felt like there was no choice. that everything was really narrowly focused on whatever it was for them personally going on in that moment, and that suicide was the thing that was really the only possibility, right? So it's not like they were weighing choices. Stacey Friedenthal's a professor in Denver, and she has this analogy of being caught up in a tornado, right? If you died in a tornado, nobody would say, oh, they didn't. This person chose not to get out of the tornado. You're just caught up in the tornado. And so the idea of choice is a little bit wonky when it comes to somebody who's in an active suicidal crisis.
So help us understand some of the risk factors associated with suicide. What makes someone more likely to experience, you know, suicidal thoughts?
So there are risk factors, which are these things that are common across the general population. So if we're talking about characteristics, we're you know, the some of the highest risk groups include white males, middle-aged, access to a firearm, relational difficulties, employment issues, sleep problems, right? So those are general categories. But if we're talking about the things that are more kind of social or individual, is if you have somebody that feels like they're a burden to others, right? That people are somehow bothered by their presence, that they're a tax on resources, and that they feel lonely, that they're not really a part of an important group to them. And the last thing is if they have been engaging in behaviors that can actually increase their familiarity or comfort with doing the thing that would end their life, right? So like mentally rehearsing it, or, you know, going out and doing whatever it is. I'm intentionally not going through the details of what those might be, but going through whatever it is that might actually end in suicide.
The preparation. Yeah, we're talking with Jonathan Singer, who studies suicide intervention and cyberbullying. He is a social work professor at Loyola University Chicago. How do you have these tough conversations about suicide? How can we talk about serious mental health issues more openly and freely? What language have you heard that might stigmatize suicide? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jonathan, Chris in Marshfield called in, couldn't stay with us, but Chris says he's a nurse in a trauma department and he works with people who have attempted suicide. And he says young people seem to struggle with the challenges of life. In general, what populations are more at risk for suicidal thoughts?
So the groups of youth with the highest rates of suicidal thoughts, right, suicidal ideation or attempt, tend to be these groups that are most marginalized and oppressed. So we have American Indian, Alaska Native youth have the highest suicide death rate in the United States. We know that sexual and gender minority youth, so LGBTQIA youth, particularly bisexual girls, transgender youth, gender diverse youth, they have high rates of suicide attempt and high rates of suicide ideation. Latina adolescents, you see more deaths by suicide in white males, but that's typically because in adolescence, because they use guns when you're sort of parsing out the data. But those groups are the highest risk.
People who don't have a history of mental illness can also experience suicidal thoughts. Why does that happen?
Well, sometimes you have there's sort of two buckets. You have people who have had ongoing thoughts of suicide throughout their life, or thoughts of death, and then you have people who haven't, but there is an event that happens, maybe something that's humiliating or shameful, that really kind of rips apart the sense of safety and security that you have. It could be that you are an adult and you were arrested for child pornography, and your profession is that you're you know, a youth leader at a church, right? That's your job. And so the disconnect and your possible future will lead to these thoughts that you have about wanting to end your life because of this event. Those are much more rare in society, but they do occur.
The language that we use to talk about suicide, that seems to have evolved. What is an appropriate way to discuss this topic?
Well, it's first of all, when you have somebody who you're talking to that you think might be suicidal, it's important that you have some sort of rapport, that they trust you. And mm-hmm. So thinking about the idea that talking with folks about suicide is really about a conversation about hope, and it's about life. It's about what has happened in your life so that the part of you that wants to live is really kind of coming up against the part of you that wants to die. And how can we acknowledge that part of you that wants to die, but also build on that part of you that wants to live? And so that can look like asking questions of, have you ever, when did you first start thinking about about dying, which is not a suicidal question. It's just about death. And then, you know, when did you think about ending your life, and, you know, how would you do this? So asking these questions that let the person know that you are okay talking about suicide.
Let's pause right there, talking about suicide prevention with Jonathan Singer, Loyola University Chicago social work professor. We'll be back in just a moment on the Ideas Network. We're talking about suicide prevention here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. So there's this new state data examining suicide, and the latest figures are from 2017. Wisconsin's Department of Health Services is going to issue a full report and a prevention plan later this year. But here's what we know. The rate of suicide was significantly higher in rural counties when compared with urban ones. Suicide was the second leading cause of death among teens. Suicide rates were highest among people ages 45 to 54, and the majority of people who died by suicide in 2017 were male. How do you have tough discussions about suicide? What do resources look like in your city, in your community? Have you been supportive for those in your life who are at risk of suicide? There is room for your story, 800-642-1234. Jonathan Singer studies suicide intervention, cyberbullying at Loyola University Chicago, and he stays with us. Jonathan, as you look at cyberbullying in particular, is there a connection between bullying online and suicidal thoughts in young people?
Yes, there is. It's not a direct cause and effect connection, but there is a relationship. And so by that, I mean that, you know, when somebody is cyberbullied, which means that there is an intentional, repeated effort to abuse somebody online. So that's not just a single mean comment, right? It's intentionally targeting someone. The person who's targeted typically will not be suicidal as a result of that one cyberbullying incident. It's a combination of things, perhaps the things that made the bully target the person in the first place, right? Maybe that person is anxious or socially awkward and not necessarily involved in activities that the rest of the peer groups are. And so the bully targeted this person intentionally. And so it could be a bunch of these things have played into what might make that person suicidal. I will say, though, that the research also says that the people who are the perpetrators, the bullies, are also at higher risk for suicide. And the people that at the highest risk for suicide are the kids that are engaged in both cyberbullying and being victims of cyberbullying.
How does that work? That they would then turn around and bully someone else?
Yes. So when somebody is intentionally targeted in one area, they might turn around and do the same thing to somebody else. And what this suggests is that this is somebody who is, just like any bully, you're looking for to raise up your social standing in an important social group. And as we were talking about before, feeling like you're not a part of an important social group or that you're a burden to a social group is one of the risk factors for suicide. And so by engaging in this behavior in one area, so cyberbullying a kid maybe in on Instagram, but over on Snapchat, you are being the victim of a cyberbullying attack. And so that's one of the ways it could work.
Jonathan, are there any improvements on the social media front? You know, how can online communities help people at risk of suicidal thoughts?
So my friend and colleague, April Foreman, she's on the executive board of the American Association of Suicidology with me. She likes to say that there's a saying in waste management that the solution to pollution is dilution. And there's a lot of pollution online when it comes to suicide. There are people who are telling you, go ahead and kill yourself. There's instructions on how to do it. There's lots of information that can contribute to suicide risk. And what we need to do is we need to add positive things or things that are life-affirming when people are out there looking for information. So if you're reading a thread on Facebook and somebody says something, jump into the conversation and say, hey, I saw that you said this, and I'm just wondering if you're okay. It sounds like a simple question, but it's really saying you are important to me. Social media companies like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram have started using some very rudimentary programming to identify people at risk for suicide, and essentially saying, hey, it looks like the things that you're searching for or posting are similar to those that people have posted in the past when they're suicidal. Mm. Would you like some help? And that's a good start, but we also know that these social media giants have incredible insight into who we are and what we're going to be doing once we leave the networks. And so we really need to put pressure on them to use that insight to help to identify people at risk for suicide and do much more sophisticated interventions.
We're talking with Jonathan Singer, who is a social work professor at Loyola University Chicago, and we're looking at suicide prevention today. Jonathan, here in Wisconsin, our Governor Tony Evers, declared this month Suicide Prevention Month and saying preventing suicide requires collaboration and compassion. Meanwhile, over at our state health department, we're seeing trending numbers going upward on suicide, more people, committing suicide. And so what would you tell states that are saying this is a public health concern, we need a plan?
I would tell them to look at the research that has been conducted on 10 years of data from the Garrett Lee Smith Act that found that communities that implement gatekeeper training actually saves lives.
What do you mean by gatekeeper training?
Yeah, gatekeeper training is when people are trained to identify the warning signs for suicide, risk factors, as we talked about before, have conversations, which we talked about before, and then know where to refer people for services. Gatekeeper training has been shown to reduce the rate of suicide by 1 per 100,000 or up to 3 per 100,000 in rural areas. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but if you're thinking about the national suicide rate is about 14 per 100,000, reducing it by 3 per 100,000 is an enormous bump up in lives saved. So implement gatekeeper training and make sure that there's funding for resources that people are being referred to, both in behavioral and mental health, but also school-based services, training for faith leaders, coaches, anybody that's involved with kids, anybody that's in a workplace needs to be trained in this.
Maddie from DePere called in to say that suicide may have something to do with our body chemistry, the vitamins we do or don't have. Jonathan, what do we think? Is there anything physiologically that we should know in connection with suicide?
There are no good research studies to suggest that taking vitamins or, the food that we eat contributes to somebody making a suicidal act. We do know that everything involved in our bodies affects our mood and our outlook, and so absolutely on that. But there's nothing specific about a vitamin deficiency or mineral deficiency that would indicate that is sort of a direct path to suicide risk.
Well, Brandon shared over email that he lost his brother-in-law to suicide, and his brother-in-law was an Army combat medic who toured in Iraq, struggled to recover after losing many friends. Brandon says members of the military, they need more help. What can we do?
Yes, and Brandon, I'm so sorry for your loss. The military has been working on this for a long time. I think one of the things that we need to do is we need to acknowledge that most veterans are living in the community, right? They're probably not receiving services through the VA. They might not be calling the veterans crisis line. And so we need to acknowledge, we need to prepare for working with veterans out in the community. We need to acknowledge that it's not just about post-traumatic stress disorder, that in fact most veterans who seek services are experiencing anxiety and depression, and we need to be prepared to work for that.
Jonathan, thank you for joining us.
Kate, thank you so much. It was an honor and a pleasure.
Jonathan Singer is an associate professor in the School of Social Work at Loyola University Chicago. He's also president of the American Association of Suicidology. If someone you know is struggling with suicidal thoughts, you can get help at 800-273-8255. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.